The computer has deleted the music file. So I made this. So welcome to another episode of Mr. Badger Talks Twitter Scum. We've got a brand new guest on the podcast this week, and it's the wonderful Steve Bummer. How's it going, Steve?
Pretty good. I'm enjoying my new name anyway. That's a great start.
Yeah. New name?
Yeah.
Why, what did you used to be called?
Sean Begley was my previous name. But, I'll go with this new name you've given me.
Why did you... Have I said it wrong? I can't read. So whatever's
on the
screen...
It's close enough. We'll go with it.
Okay, Steve. Right, so from what I understand, and again, I've got a limited grasp of what's in front of me. We're here to talk about marzipan. Is that correct?
I thought it was comic books. I don't know much about marzipan.
I thought it was like a festive thing. I thought it's because Christmas is coming. You said, I'll do marzipan. It's almost spelt the same as comics.
Close enough. There's a couple of similar letters, all right. I think there's an I in there anyway.
They both start with an F, don't they?
Okay.
The science
sounds good.
I've developed my own language, you know.
You're doing well for a badger, no, I have to say. I've never encountered a badger with such a broad grasp of language as yourself.
I'm not a real badger, I'm a man in a costume.
Oh, well, it's very convincing, I have to say. I've never seen a real-life badger, apart from, you know, on the side of a motorway. Dead, of course. But this is my first encounter with a real badger.
They're not dead, they're sleeping, my mummy told me.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my mum used to tell me that too, but, yeah.
Some of them sleep with their intestines out.
It looks like it, all right.
So, your specialist subject, comics, I take it you don't see much blood and guts in that, do you?
Oh, well, it depends on the comics. If you've ever seen The Boys on Amazon Prime, that's basically...
I've seen lots of boys, yeah.
I walked myself into that one, didn't I?
Yeah.
But it was created by a guy called Garth Ennis. He's from Belfast, I think, and he's pretty sick now with the kind of material that he comes up with. He had Preacher a couple of years back on, I think, AMC, and that was sick enough as well. So The Boys comic, I had to give up on it. It was too much for me.
That's weird, because Belfast is such a calm place, isn't it?
Generally, I suppose, yeah. That's one way of putting it. But
there's division. No division at all.
Absolutely not. No. They're like one big happy family up there. Yeah.
Well, I couldn't help notice, but from your accent, you're also from Scotland, aren't you?
A bit further south. I'm from the Republic of Ireland.
Because there's two different bits in Ireland, isn't there?
Two different bits, yeah. Northern Ireland, Republic, yeah.
So why didn't they call it Southern Ireland? Why is it Republic of?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, we don't have a monarchy here, I suppose. That's why they call it the Republic of Ireland.
Northern Ireland does. You don't have a king or queen?
No, well, our closest would be our president, Michael D. Higgins. He's a tiny little fella. He's always making statements to the UN. I don't know if you've seen him on the telly. But nice fella.
Are his children paedophiles?
Not that I know of.
He's not a proper monarch, then.
I guess not. It's the closest we have.
Ah, well. I suppose it'd have to be his brother now, wouldn't it? What with our queen sadly passing away at the young age of 3,000 or whatever it was in lizard years. I don't know. So you want to talk about comic book, and you're not talking like your Desperate Dan and your Minnie the Minx and all that shit, are you?
Well, I would have started with that when I was a kid. The Beano and the Dandy and the Beezer and that kind of stuff. And it would have been, I suppose, the comics that I grew up with, they still had a strong emphasis on corporal punishment, which is what we were used to in the 80s, you know. So, you know yourself, like that. Say Dennis the Menace would do something terrible, and then the father would come home, the slipper would come out, the weapon of choice, like, and the teacher and the Bastry kids had the cane. You know, it's a golden age of corporal punishment, but you don't see that anymore. I mean, my kids they read the Beano now and again, and it's all very sanitized and all very, you know. I mean, the parents are still idiots, the teachers are still idiots, but all that corporal punishment stuff is gone. So
it's changed with the times, has it? Like.
Well, yeah, that seems to be the case. I suppose everything has to change with the times, you know?
Yeah, cause, well, I suppose it's not long until what with my last guest had on, Dennis the Menace will be trans now, won't he?
I saw that podcast. It was great. You never know. Denise the Menace, it could be next, yeah?
Denise the Menace. It sounds French. But yeah, so, but as you said, like they've taken that out of the kids' comics. Yeah. So they've placed that into some of the adults' ones on the side with this, the boys and everything.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of stuff. Would have been DC Comics had an imprint called Vertigo, which is defunct now, but they still have a lot of dark. I think they have a dark label. And all that Garth Ennis stuff would have been there. And he works for other publishers as well. But it's the likes of him now that have brought a lot of people into the mainstream and on board with buying comics. Alongside, obviously, the rise of the Marvel movies, the DC movies, that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's something for everybody because it's not just, like you mentioned about the, you know, Dennis the Menace, and it's not just kiddie stuff, it's everything. Like there'll be crime, war comics, relationship based comics. There's one called Persepolis. It's about a girl growing up in Iran during the 70s and 80s.
Chris Evans,
it's the 70s and 80s, the 1970s.
I thought you said it was called Chris Evans.
Persepolis. I have a copy. This is Persepolis 2. I haven't read this one yet, actually, so I'm looking forward to it. I just picked that up the other day in the charity shop. So this kind of stuff is there, black and white. So I'm looking forward to reading it.
That's like me, I'm black and white.
Well, yeah, and a bit of grey as well. Yep.
How fucking dare you? I know I'm in my late 60s now, but I think I look quite fresh for my age.
I know, you look great. Yeah, fair play to you.
Thank you. I didn't expect you to have such an exquisite accent, if I'm honest. Most Scottish people I know are plastered drunk by this time of night.
Well, it's what is it, about 8:15? Give me time. About 45 minutes, I'll have a couple of drinks on me.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm from the west of Ireland originally, actually.
The west of Ireland.
I'm from Galway, but I've been living in the east, just near Dublin now for the last 23 years.
Dublin's expensive, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's ridiculous, the prices of everything.
I listened to a podcast by a man called The Blinded Boy, and he says that apparently over in Dublin there's lots of properties completely empty because nobody can afford to rent them.
Yeah, it's true. The owners are waiting for the prices to increase and to offload them some. What's happening is a lot of American, what they call American vulture funds, are coming over, you know, investment firms, and buying them up wholesale. It's people are struggling to. I'm sure it's the same in Britain, but it is pretty tough for a lot of people. We're lucky now. We bought a house about 16 years ago. I mean, I say, you know, we don't own it. The bank still owns it until we pay off the bloody mortgage. But, you know, at least we have somewhere to live. No, so that's good. But,
you want to do what I do. I live in a tent.
A tent? I thought it was a set that badgers live in. Or is that...
I'm not a real badger.
Huh?
I'm a human man dressed as a badger.
You did say that. I'm a bit. I've got four kids, so I'm a bit worn out. I'm not great at paying attention, Mr. Badger. So apologies for that.
Apology not accepted.
I'm used to that. I'm used to that from the four kids. Yeah.
I was going to say I'm just guessing from the wife as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I have a quiet house now at the moment. They're all out, fortunately. So I get to talk to my badger friend from when everybody's out of the house, so that's good.
It's always a good idea to talk to me when the children are out of the house, yeah.
I figured that out from watching previous podcasts on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah.
I figured that out pretty quickly, yeah.
We'll go back to the comic books, though, because where I live in Shropshire, there's quite a famous man who wrote comic books, a man called Charlie Adlard, who did The Walking Dead.
Oh, he's brilliant, yeah. I collected The Walking Dead for years. I missed out on the first few issues, and I was kicking myself because at one stage, issue one was selling for about $2,000.
Jesus! And,
yeah, I know, it was ridiculous because there was a limited print run. I think it was 3,000 copies originally. And I was over in Los Angeles, I think, and I saw issue two on the shelves. I was on my honeymoon, and I said to myself, I'll wait. What they do is they collect the first 6 to 8 issues, in what they call a trade paperback collected edition. So I says, I'll wait for the trade paperback. I won't bother buying issue two. I think it was issue 4 and 5. But sure, issue 2 ended up being worth about 1,500 as well. Issue 3, about $1,000. So I was kicking myself. No, I ended up selling all my Walking Dead books just to pay off some ridiculous gas bill and electricity bill and stuff. But it was worth it.
How do you know if a comic book's going to take off like that? You know, because surely when they first come out, they're only a couple of quid or something.
About, I think the average one now is about $5, which I don't know what that translates to in sterling, but it's roughly €5 in Ireland. But you just don't know. You're taking a risk on something being good or not being good. But they are cheap enough, when they start off. But there was a few of them. I don't know. Have you heard of Invincible? It's on Amazon Prime. The original comic that those were going for a ridiculous price. Written by the same guy who wrote Walking Dead, actually. Guy called Robert Kirkman. But I sold a few of those early issues as well. They went for a stupid price. But what I did as well, I was kicking myself about this one. I was so impressed with issue 1 of Invincible that I bought about 10 copies and I handed them out to all my friends. I said, you're going to love this. This is brilliant. And they ended up being worth like $600 or $700 dollars each. So like a fucking idiot. There's my first curse of the night.
I'm not a fan of swearing.
Yeah. Are you not? All right. No. That's a surprise.
You'll never find me swearing. I'm a very fucking good badger, you know.
Fair play. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm a primary teacher, so I have to be kind of careful with the language. Yeah,
where is this in Northern Scotland, Ireland?
Yeah, it's near Dublin. Yeah, close enough.
I can't get there on foot, can I?
Well, I don't know.
I live in Shropshire and I've got gout.
I would say that would be a no. There'd be a train and a bus and a boat involved, or possibly a plane.
That's no good for me then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you these comic books you gave away, where they're worth so much each, did your friends give you anything back in return then? They become very valuable?
No, I didn't ask. I mean, at the time, they were only worth €3 or €4. But when the TV show took off, and even before that, the value went through the roof. But the important thing about, realizing that value is they have to be in pristine condition. So if there's any sort of cracks or folds or obviously coffee stains, that kind of stuff, it destroys the value. So I think the friends that I have, they wouldn't have taken care of the comics to the same degree that I would. So they wouldn't ultimately be worth 700, probably 100, 150, something like that,
I was just going to say that I'm not too sure on the UK ones. I prefer the... I'm not a connoisseur, but I do collect a few myself, and I like the really posh ones you get from Japan, where there's little schoolgirls being shagged by tentacles.
I don't like the manga at all myself.
No.
And not even those particular ones. It's just the style of them. They just never appealed to me. I mean, there were a few years ago. I read Akira, which was made into a film. By a guy called Katsuhiro Otomo. Now that was pretty good, and he had another book called Memories, which was excellent. But apart from that, I never really got into the Japanese stuff. It just didn't appeal to me. But they're massive. Like, they're selling way more than the American comics and the British comics. I mean, look, the British comics industry is, the arse has fallen out of it, to be honest with you, compared to when I started collecting back in the 80s.
Is that because most British people can't read nowadays? Like, anything longer than 3 emojis and people are fucked, isn't they?
That could be it. I think it has something to do with the rise of other forms of entertainment. And once computer games and came along, streaming services, kids just lost interest in comics. I mean, there's a few still holding on. The Commando War books by DC Thompson, I think they're based in Dundee. They're still being published, and the Beanos is still on the go. There might be a few others, but they'd be the most prominent ones. And I mean, every Christmas, you'll see the annuals coming out as well.
Yeah.
They're a nice little thing to have it in the Christmas sock, some of the old, the Dandy and the Buster and stuff like that, they come out. So they're always nice to, for nostalgic purposes, I pick them up, and my kids read them as well. So it's good.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there by saying that the different media, because now if a kid sort of like needs entertaining, you just give it a tablet and stick YouTube on or something, don't you? Gone are the days of kids reading, really, even though we're trying to force that back onto them. They're not really interested. They just want instant action now.
Yeah. Well, we're not much different as adults, you know. I mean, I just decompress. I'll stick on something on Netflix and watch that for a couple of hours. And I have to force myself to read because it's much easier to let like the images on a screen wash over you. But you kind of have to commit to reading. You're part of the process. But it is worth it. There's more value in reading than watching something, I think, anyway. I'm sure many would disagree. But.
Well, I'm too lazy to read sometimes, which is why I end up in the women's toilets.
I don't know how you made that link. There are other choices other than reading, but I mean, you know,
I thought it just said, "Whoa, men!" And I was like, "Yeah, that'd be the one that I've got to do and do get me cock out in." Well, at least that's my excuse anyway. And it got me off. I didn't go to prison, so.
Oh, yeah, lucky.
I mean, it's not lucky. It's I mean, not planned. It's an accident from years of neglect from not reading comic books. That's a shame, isn't it? Because the Japanese ones that I like to read. Well, I say read. I just like to look at the pictures. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your favourite? What's your favourite one?
Erotsuka Doji.
Oh, that's a horror show. That one. I watched. That was made into a film as well, wasn't it?
It was. It's
yeah, and I watched 5 minutes of it, and I had to turn it off. It was horrific.
I couldn't. Oh. I'm going to break the fourth wall here. I couldn't understand it. Me mate put it up. Remember the days of VHS? Me mate put the video in, and I watched the entire thing with him, and he was like, "It's brilliant, isn't it?" I haven't got a fucking clue what happened. All I know is several young women got shagged by tentacle monsters from outer space.
Like, I remember that too, and I didn't enjoy it. I would have seen it when I was about 12 or 13, and it wasn't appropriate for me then, and it wouldn't be appropriate for me now.
No, that's it. You do have to wonder. Like, I understand someone out there is going to be quite mentally ill and go, "I've made this cartoon. It's all about weird tentacle demons shagging kids and that." And you go, "All right, fair enough." What person goes, "What a brilliant idea. Here's some money. Let's make that into a film."
Well, presumably they were Japanese. I mean, it's a different culture, you know.
It is a different culture, but I'm fairly confident that's not a common thing, you know. There weren't samurais back then going, "I hope some fucking space monster shags this girl with its tentacles." It's a bit of an odd one, isn't it?
It certainly is.
I was going to say, have you been a lifelong comic book fan then?
Yeah, I would have been since I was about 6 or 7. I mean, my parents would have promoted it. And, you know, every week you'd pick up the Eagle and Roy the Rovers. And, you know, when I got a bit older, 2000 AD, and then into the American comics after that, would have started with... So where I grew up, they weren't readily available. There were some reprints of Spider-Man comics made by, I think it was Panini. And then a few American comics started coming in one of the local shops. So there was The Incredible Hulk and X-Factor, X-Men, stuff like that. So it just sort of blossomed from there. And then I got into the likes of Sandman by Neil Gaiman, which was made into a show for Netflix there recently. And, you know, you'd go into different genres then, like, say, crime and war and thriller and that kind of stuff. So it's been a lifelong passion. I mean, your interest dips for a while. You know, when I was a student, I didn't have much money, so I stopped for a while. But then when you're earning a wage, you know, it goes up again. And then, so, you know, I've been stuck with it. I'm approaching 50 now. So I've been over 40 years a fan of comic books, you know.
If you had to guess how much do you think you've probably spent on comic books? I know they're probably worth a lot more now, but how much value-wise and how much room in your house do you reckon you're spending the comics are taking up?
Well, I have about 40,000. I know. Now, I was never an investor. Like, you have some guys, they don't even read them. They just buy them and they wait for the value to inflate and they sell them on.
Yeah.
But obviously, you have to put a lot of money into that. So that was never for me. So I would get reprints of you know, the older comics, all right. But all told, I'm not sure how much the value of the collection would be. But it's a buyer's market, to be honest with you. So if I tried to sell them, it'd be a struggle to ship the whole lot. So I'd rather keep them anyway for, I say, nostalgic purposes. And my son now, he's 17, he reads them. My daughter not so much. She wouldn't be into the reading. But the other two kids as well, they love the comics. And when they're a bit older, they'd be able to tap into my collection as well.
You know, so. But the thing that would worry me is sort of like, you know, one flood or something like that, you know, something goes wrong in your house and you've lost the bloody lot, haven't you?
Yeah. I have them in the attic. But, I mean, sure, look, you can have a leak in the roof easily enough.
Yeah.
And I did inquire about insuring them, but I was told by the insurance company that what I have to do is catalogue every single issue. And I wasn't going to do that. So they said, well, then we can't help you. So that was it. That was the end of that conversation.
Is there any sort of natural rocks? I know, like, I've got friends that do computer game collecting and that. And even if it's on, like, what's it called, a DVD, like a disc,
yeah.
If it's on one of them, there's something called plastic rot, where just over time it'll just go,
yeah.
I give up and just fucking melt.
I know that you need to have it at a sort of an ambient temperature. And the attic is pretty cold, so I'm not, like, they are all in plastic bags. They're special bags called Mylar. So they do protect the comic books, but the cold will affect them as well over time, I think. So I'll have to look into that, because there's books I wouldn't have seen for years. Like,
yeah.
You know, you get these big, long boxes, and they're at the back of the attic, so I wouldn't have seen them in maybe 10 years. So once I start moving stuff around, I'll figure out. I mean, they could be. And actually, we have a problem with, you know, silverfish,
an
insect. They're all over the house at the moment, and apparently they love eating the glue in books. So any of the collected editions, they get right in there, eat the glue, and the books fall apart. Now, I'm not sure if it'd be a problem with the regular comic books, which are just stapled, but we're just overrun with them. So I'm not sure what state the comics will be in when I eventually get to. We'll just have to wait and see, you know.
I'm going to start calling a few of my friends Silverfish then, because they're hooked on glue as well. Oh, dear. That's another question I should ask as well. And I know this can be taken the wrong way. Being a comic book fan, it used to be what's known as being like a geek, didn't it? You know, it used to be like the reclusive, the silent kids. Was that you at a young age, or was it just you were a normal lad, but you'd always been into comic books?
I don't know. It's just I was always into it. But no, unfortunately, I did choose two other hobbies which didn't help my street cred. I was into stamp collecting and bird watching as well. Yeah, because like if one of those things wouldn't guarantee I'd be bullied, I had to go for the fucking hat trick. But my parents, like, they readily supported these hobbies. Like, you know, they buy the bird books and the stamps and all that for me. It's just whatever I was into, because I wasn't that into sports. My brothers were all right. But they were just happy to see me engaging in some kind of hobbies. No, I had friends as well, but they weren't into that stuff.
It's nice that you had supportive parents.
I know, they're brilliant, yeah.
Yeah. Like, my mum didn't support my hobby, you know.
And what hobby would that be? I'm afraid to ask.
I'm not allowed to say on camera.
Okay.
It was worse than a Roxacodosia, I tell you.
Well, then, all right, then I don't want to know. I'm sorry I asked at all.
No, that's it. You're doing well keeping out of it. I think the distance between us helps if it ever does go to court, you know.
Okay. Well, I'm in a different jurisdiction as well, so that helps even further.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can use your address as my address, can I, as a temporary
one? I wouldn't think so. I don't think I've given you my address, and I'm not going to now, so thanks for... Thanks for letting me know.
Oh, shit. I should have left that. I should have done that a bit earlier on, shouldn't I? This is what we befriend and then we tell what we... Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. Well, going back to the thing about you and your youth and everything. As I say, you said you weren't like the geek. You had your friends and everything who weren't into it. Nowadays, do you feel it has been hijacked by mainstream media?
I think it has. And people would say that they're comic book fans, but they really mean the movies, because the comic books haven't really seen the impact of the rise of the movies, because the sales are roughly the same as they were before the explosion in Marvel and DC films. You know, people will say that they're fans, but what they might do is they would collect the trade paperbacks. So I have one here. This would be like a collected edition of Preacher. So that, you know, people might buy this out of interest to see if it's similar to the TV show. But the regular monthly comics, there hasn't been a huge increase in sales there. I mean, you know, it's peaks and troughs, but it kind of it stabilizes. So people say that they're comic book fans. Generally, they mean the movies, I think.
That's, and generally, it's the Marvel ones, isn't it?
Yeah, Marvel ones, well, I suppose they were the first one to have the shared universe idea. Was it Iron Man, I think, was the first one that came out.
Yeah.
And obviously DC have tried to do that. They haven't been as successful. The movies haven't been as good, and just interlinking the stories hasn't been, as I say, as successful. It hasn't been as seamless as, say, with the Marvel ones. But they're trying. I saw that TV show that they did called Peacemaker, which was a spin-off from Suicide Squad. It was very entertaining, actually. Really enjoyed it. And, you know, the Batman movie with Robert Pattinson was pretty good. So the second one coming out next year, the year after. So, you know, they're doing their best, but it's difficult to compete with Marvel, I think, because they know what they're doing.
I think Marvel have fucked it lately, haven't they? I think since they've gone with Disney, it's just taken a downward trajectory.
They seem to be running out of storylines. And some of the stuff that I've watched, I would have been a big fan of She-Hulk comics from the 80s and the 90s, but the TV show didn't quite do it justice. And there's a show called Miss Marvel, and I read the comic book, it was pretty good, but the show didn't hook me. And there's been a few bits and pieces. The third Ant-Man movie I thought was terrible. It looked amazing, special effects, but the storyline was ridiculous. Whereas the first two, which looked like they had, you know, there was far less money spent on them, but story-wise, they were much better. To me, anyway, that's what I thought. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, I think there's kind of a saturation point as well. Audiences are kind of jaded, and they want something different. It's more of the same that's coming out. And, you know, people are looking for something different, and they haven't quite caught on yet as to how to do that in a different way. But I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Well, I was going to say, with that, I think that's genuinely going to help the genuine comic book fans, because I think, like, as the interest wanes, the only people that are going to be interested in that universe again are the people that loved it in the first place anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I take your love, as you've said, it wasn't really the Marvel and the DC, because you said you couldn't get hold of the American ones. It was it British comics then?
It would have started with British comics. It really took off when I started reading The Eagle, featuring Dan Dare and Doomlord.
Yeah, I love those. Was that one with the big fucking head, didn't there?
Yeah. He was an alien from Planet Nox, I think it was called, and.
I was thinking of Ian Hislop.
There's a slight similarity between them. That was a great one. I think it was written by John Wagner and Alan Grant. These would be two of the big guys, big writers in British comics industry. They would have written a lot of stuff for 2000 AD and Battle and a few other comics as well. I think Alan Grant's passed away there recently. But John Wagner's still on the go. That's where it really blossomed, my love of comic books. And as I mentioned, Roy the Rovers was never a massive soccer fan, but the storylines were very good. And then on to 2000 AD, I loved a lot of the stories from guys that ended up working in America. The likes of Alan Moore, who you'd know from Watchmen, like Pete Milligan. He's doing well in America still. So, yeah, as I say, it just blossomed from there until I eventually discovered where I could find American comic books. It usually meant a trip to Dublin or a mail order service, something like that, you know.
I'm wondering if America are trying to copy the UK, because I remember you mentioned it just before, the 2000 AD, with your, I think it had Judge Dredd and, like, Tank Girl and all that, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because that was quite an adult comic book, but from what I understood, like, the American comics, they were mainly, like, for kids and teenagers and that.
They would have been,
Yeah. Because I never really thought that America understood Judge Dredd until the second film came out, the one where he's in the tower block. That was
That's a brilliant film, yeah. The first one is terrible. But the second one was excellent, I thought. But it didn't do well at all, unfortunately.
No, I always thought it was like The Raid, but for geeks. It was brilliant.
You're spot on. Yeah, very similar. No.
And again, like Tank Girl, when that came out, I just thought, what a load of crap.
Oh, it was awful. Awful. Yeah. Was it Ice-T was a kangaroo in that, wasn't he?
I say he was a ripper, wasn't it? It had Laurie Petty as Tank Girl, who's the least Tank Girl person you could cast.
Terrible. I think that comic started in Deadline. It was a magazine. It was kind of a music magazine, but it had you know, comic book strips in it as well. I think Bastard Bunny was another one that featured in that. And Steve Dillon actually was the guy behind Deadline. He ended up doing Preacher with Garth Ennis. And he lived in Dublin for a while, actually. But he's another guy that passed away a couple of years ago. But he was a great creator. And he would have done a good bit of stuff in America, too. But you were saying about the Americans not really understanding the likes of the 2000 AD and more mature stuff. But there was a thing called the British Explosion, where a lot of the British creators went to America and they sort of revolutionized comics. And that model has become the model of what comics should be, the more mature ones anyway, from about 1986 on.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've stuck with it ever since. Yeah.
Changing tack wildly. Are you a fan of the weirder British comics, such as like Viz and Zit and all that sort of stuff?
Well, I love Viz because they're a perfect parody of the old Beano and Dandy. And the way that they break the fourth wall and they go, oh, ho, ho, reader, and they bring you in. There's something ridiculous happening. I mean, love that the likes of Johnny Farpants and Roger Melly, the man on telly, and Sid the Sexist, of course. I wouldn't buy the monthly editions. They collect them into large books about, you know, once a year, I think.
Yeah.
They'd be on my bookcase, and then sometimes the kids see all the lovely cartoons that look like something from the Beano. They pick them out. And then my wife goes feckin' bananas. Like, she goes, what are you doing? Would you lock them bloody things away? So the comics do get me into trouble from time to time. Usually it involves the spending, because they are expensive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I have this little trick. She's never going to see this podcast, so it's grand. It usually
not many people are, to be honest.
So we're safe. I buy a load of them and I just leave them in the boot of the car. And then, like, sort of 1 o'clock in the morning, I sneak them into the house and hide them under the stairs or something. It's ridiculous. As I say, I'm nearly 50. But, yeah.
Like contraband, oh dear.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, as if I was doing something wrong. Because I know I'd get an earful.
So. I love you, that you're trying to explain your guilty pleasure to me.
Yeah.
Oh dear. So we'll do one last question, and we'll do a bit of plugging. My big question I want to say to you, and I'm not going to do the whole, what's the most expensive comic book you got? I'm going to say, out of all your books, especially the ones that you probably think that people might have not heard about, what do you wish would be turned either into a series or a film, like be given the big Hollywood treatment?
There was one from, I think, about 1990 by DC Comics called Screamer by Pete Milligan. And it's a crime thriller set in the future. And Brett Ewins was the artist, I think. Steve Dillon was involved as well. But it's one of my favorite stories. 6-issue miniseries, that was it. Never heard of it after that. That sort of stuck with me as a particularly good story. And I've always had a soft spot for a series called Animal Man, which it's originally from the 60s. But Grant Morrison, another British writer, he took it over in about 1988, I think it was, and he did amazing work with that. And then Pete Milligan took over, and there was a guy called Jerry Prosser and Tom Veitch. But that whole, the whole thing, or Animal Man, he's an environmentalist, but he's a superhero as well. Now, I don't think it would do so well on the big screen, maybe a TV series, but there was something about that, about the environmental aspect as well. And he was a family man too, it really appealed to me. So those two, I think, would be particularly good. Probably as TV shows.
I'm quite happy that you enjoy the idea of an animal man. I don't know why, but there's something about that pleases me. Well, anyway, so it wasn't Steve, was it? It was Sean Buggery, wasn't it?
Sean Begley.
Sean Begley. Sean, we'll do a little bit of plug at the end of the show. Do you want people to contact you on socials or anything, or follow you?
I'm on the usual. I'm on Instagram. I mean, you know, I think just Sean B Comedy, I think it is. And like, you know, jokes and memes, and sometimes they're even funny. Like, so, you know, I'd be doing my best, because usually I use the social media to kind of test out new jokes. And, you know, if they get a bit of traction, they end up on stage. And if they don't, well, they just go in the bin. And, you know, it's trial and error, really. I suppose, like everybody. You know? So,
I prefer social media to like just going out and doing an open mic where you might have 6 people who don't really give a shit about comedy. At least the people that are following you, they're normally quite honest. If it only gets 2 likes, you're like, oh, shit, I'm not going to do that one again.
And actually, there's a few people that follow me, they're even more honest than that. And they'll, they'll write WTF and give up the day job, or don't give up the day job, rather. Yeah. And there's one guy, and he just puts an angry emoji every time I do a joke that he doesn't like. And my favorite response my favorite response ever was somebody tagged his mate, and he goes, "Here, would you look at the actual state of this joke?" That is my favorite criticism ever, I have to say. So I actually put them in a show sometimes about it, because you kind of have to take ownership of the criticism and the mistakes you make along the way, I think. Actually, one of my favorite quotes ever, I did during the lockdown, I did the comedy store Gong Show online. And I did pretty well, actually. I beat the gong. I didn't win the night. But when I went off screen, Simon, the gong master, his response was fairly underwhelming. So that was on my Twitter bio for a year after that.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, fantastic.
So if you want to follow a fairly underwhelming comic, it was Sean B. Comedy, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Now, I wouldn't agree with that summation, but, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, so it's fine.
Well, say goodbye to the Wishing Girls, you fairly underwhelming comic.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.